Is episode 8 of Roland Chidiac Connects, and I'm meeting with Stephen Hurley, but this is not our first meeting. This is what I'm going to call the Stephen Hurley 2.0.
I've always wanted to be a 2.0, Roland.
Well, here you are, 2.0. So, because when I was looking at my notes from the last time we talked, I looked at them and I thought, yeah, I'm just going to put this aside and I'm going to start a new set of notes. It's going to be fun. So the last time you and I connected, we did record a podcast, but unfortunately the audio wasn't stellar. So we want to make sure that this time you get to hear who Stephen Hurley is, what he's about, what he's up to, and what motivates and inspires him. So thanks for doing this again.
Yeah, well, you know, and some of those things may have changed since the last time we talked last week. So we'll see.
Right on. So let's start by, I guess I'll let everybody know how you and I know each other. So several years ago, we connected on Twitter. And after some back and forth, I discovered that you were into internet radio, DS106 radio. Is that correct?
That's right. And that was an initiative I found out about just by chance about 6 years ago. I was talking to Dean Shoresky the other day, actually yesterday on the phone, and he was at this Unplugged weekend I attended in Algonquin Park, I guess about 6 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. And that's where I found out about this internet radio station. And immediately my imagination was captured because I always wanted to be on the radio ever since grade 4. And so this was like a dream come true. And then we connected and you tried your hand at it as well. And and so here we are now talking to each other kind of on the radio.
Right, right. So you got me connected. I tried it out. I did enjoy it very much, but I found that somewhere along the way, it didn't suit my fancy at some point. The last time you and I talked, I told a little story about how I kind of always wanted to get into or onto the radio. And I'm not really feeling like I want to talk about that tonight. So thanks to you, my chance to be on the radio, on internet radio, and it was fun. And now I'm doing the podcast, so it is like we're on the radio, but it's more, I like it because I can archive it and I can send it out to the world whenever I want. So it's just a different experience. And I'm really happy that I've discovered this thanks to some really awesome people.
Well, you know, Roland, it just to jump in on that, if I could, I think one of the things that we did talk about was that the passions that we grow up with never do die, but we find different ways of living them. And so kudos to you for pursuing this, because I think this is awesome. Just the idea of creating a podcast based on what you're interested in and putting it out there. So congratulations.
Thanks. I appreciate it. It's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying myself tremendously by, you know, I was thinking today about this, knowing we were going to talk. I had a lot of errands to run. I was doing all kinds of stuff. And I just thought, how cool is this that I get to spend, you know, 45 minutes to an hour chatting with a buddy this evening. And then I get to do it again in another few evenings. And it's just neat that I've actually time to sit down with people and hang out. And that's something that I always want to do. I just never do it because everybody's so busy. But there's a really cool way to connect with people all over the world. And that's part of the passion, is to connect with people and to get them to tell their story. And, you know, if I can get something out of it, then there's going to be a lot of people out there who are going to hear something that's going to help them along their way.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, some people criticize social media and our web-based life for being impersonal and for not getting us in touch with real people. But this technology that you're using and this concept that you have and others have had really do put people in touch with each other. And, you know, I would never have met you had it not been for this, you know, this shared passion. And I can say the same thing about a lot of people in my network, quote unquote network. I would never have met them, would never have known they existed had it not been for Twitter and blogging. And so, yeah, It's something we need to keep in mind.
For sure. It's opened up a whole new world, and I'm happy for it, because I don't know about you, but I can't just be getting up every second night and leaving my house for an hour to go meet up with someone. It's just not realistic. I mean, the podcast, you're number 8, but I'm up to 12. So it's, you know, I've spent 11 hours talking to people. And if I told my wife every second night, okay, I'm out of here, I'm heading down to the local pub to chat with somebody, I'll be back in an hour and a half, I don't think that would go over as well as this does. So I do really appreciate the technology and the fact that it's helping me go after a passion that involves other people. It's very cool.
Yeah, you do need to bring your cassette recorder down to the pub on occasion, though, and get some live stuff, because we don't want to lose pubs, do we?
No, we don't want to do that. And that is a good idea. And I would love to have that background noise, you know, of people hanging out and having fun. So that's definitely an idea. And when it happens, I can say that Stephen Hurley, you know, he suggested it and gave it a nice push. So stay tuned, Stephen. But if we could come back to you with respect to education and what you're up to, can you tell us a little bit about the work you did before you retired from education and then started your new world life, is what I'm going to call it?
Yeah. So I was kind of the reluctant teacher, you know, the one that says, I'll listen to my mom, and who said that, you know, go get your teaching degree because you'll always have something to fall back on. So I never really, you know, I wasn't one of those people that dreamed of being a teacher ever since I was a kid. Something I fell into probably a little bit because I wasn't sure what else to do. But, you know, when I walked through the doors of that first school, there was something really magical that happened. And I just kept going and you know, began. I was supposed to teach grade 1 my first year teaching. The principal said, well, we're going to put you in grade 1. It turned out it was a grade 8 class. He was just putting me into grade 1 as a placeholder. So I taught mainly for the 30 years that I was with the Dufferin-Peel district, mainly grades 7 and 8, a little bit of junior. I did some consulting work at the district office, was a religion consultant for a year, and then launched an initiative. This was good because this is funny. Part of the dynamic of my teaching was I loved to write proposals and create jobs that didn't exist before. And, you know, to the point where people later in my career would come up to me and say, well, what job have you created for yourself this year? And it was, I was working for a district at a time when that type of thing was possible. So in 1993, 94, we were part of an initial SchoolNet initiative out of Industry Canada. And I had this great idea that I would actually go across Canada. I proposed this to Industry Canada. I would go across Canada. I would sell my house. I would buy a Volkswagen microbus, and I would go into communities on a Sunday night, introduce them to this thing called the internet, work with schools during the week, and have this presentation at the school on Thursday, and then go off to the next place. So that was the type of thing I would. And the internet was just new at that time. SchoolNet was new. And it captured people's imagination. So I called my real estate agent. I called the Volkswagen company to see what they had in stock. And I went up to Industry Canada. I went up to Ottawa for a meeting, and they said, this is great. Okay, we'll get everything organized. My executive assistant will call you on Monday. So I thought this was a done deal. And then the wheels started to slow down, and they realized that scalability was going to be a big thing with this initiative. So instead of doing that on a national level, I created a team of consultants that worked with me to basically go into classrooms and to work with teachers on technology. And I did that for a few years. Had the opportunity also to go down to OISE, to the Faculty of Education, and taught there for 3 years. Hopefully didn't ruin the lives of many teacher candidates, although I was a little nervous those first couple of years, and came back to Dufferin-Peel and worked in classrooms, and then retired as arts consultant from the district, and really thrilled to be able to do that as well. So I was going to say a checkered history, but that sounds kind of dark. It's been exciting. It's been vibrant, and you know, I've woken up every, I can honestly say woken up every day and been excited to get to where I'm going. Sometimes because I wanted to correct the mistakes that I left the day before or the Friday before, but often just to try new things and to be with students and colleagues that, you know, cared about that. And all that sounds rather cliche, but it's true. And look, that's how you look back on 30 years. And so I retired a few years ago and am still, they give me a pension check every month, which is great. Today was pension check day. And I looked at my bank account and they say, oh, okay, that's where all that money went that they took away from me during those years. But I'm doing a lot of work nationally now, doing a lot of work with the Canadian Education Association, and would love to chat a bit about that, but I'll pause for a breath.
Awesome. That was great. Checkered, you're right. That's not a good word to use, a checkered past, but you've had, it sounds fulfilling. It sounds interesting. Sounds varied. I want to talk about for a second your work at the Faculty of Education. What did you teach at the faculty?
Well, I was coordinating one of the regional options. So at that time, students were divided into groups of about 70 or 75, and they chose an option based on either a dynamic of the program or, in my case, I was working with Kathy Marks-Kirpan on the regional option. So students that wanted to teach in Peel or Halton or Hamilton, geographically, that would be a better place for them because they could do their classwork in the Mississauga-Brampton area and do their practicum in that area as well. So I taught social studies. I taught, my favorite was a course called School and Society, which drew on my love of philosophy and sociology. And we looked at different models of schooling and loved the assignment we did in the last couple of years. I was there where students actually designed the school of their dreams, and they had to present it at a school of my dreams symposium, and that was a lot of fun to really get in touch with and remind students that they, you know, as teacher candidates, they come to this profession with a set of values and a set of visions and a set of dreams, and they have to hold on to those. So. And I also taught some technology. Technology is really the reason that they wanted me to come, and then they just wrapped everything else around it. And so that was 3 years that were really, really an interesting part at an interesting time in my career. You know, sort of in the beginning of the last third of my career, the turn of the century.
After the 3 years, did you decide to leave?
No, nobody decides to leave a position like that because it's not that it's easy. It's just that it is so fulfilling and rich. No, I was called back. I was on secondment, so my board refused to renew or decided not to renew that secondment. And I had to, you know, I had a choice to make. I said I had the choice. Do I resign from the board and go on contract with OISE? You know, that was a possibility at the time and something I thought I would do. But you know what? I decided to get married instead. And so
that's a big deal.
Yeah. And it was because I had been not avoiding that, but I'd been doing other things for most of my life. So I decided, no, I'm going to settle down and I'll come back to the board. And, I had my master's at the time. I got my master's when I was at OISE. And so I decided to come and spend the next third of my career back where I love to be, and that's in classrooms.
Well, I hope that my second half is as exciting as your whole 30 years. So I'm just starting my second half. So it's my 16th mm-hmm. year, and I'm allowed to leave after 30. We'll see what happens. Mm. Life started, you know, with a pension check coming in, just kind of like what you said the last time we spoke. The way I guess I was referring to retirement was that, you know, you're done. And your response is, no, I'm just getting started. So I do remember that.
You know,
I hope.
And you know what? I like the word retirement because, you know, when you retire something, you retire your vehicle, you don't have to throw the vehicle away. Just put new tires on it, right? And you get another 200,000 kilometers out of it. And that's the metaphor. That's the way I like to look at it. I'm getting started. Lots of new roads ahead. And one piece of advice that I have for everyone, whether they accept them or not, write the proposals. You know, take what's in your imagination. Put it in front of your director of education, put it in front of your superintendent. They get to know you. They get to know the passion. And they may say, forget it. But you know what? In the 30 years, I was in every director of education's office for one reason or another. But usually it was because I had an idea and they would listen and they want to listen and they still want to listen. So
that sounds like it'd be a cool book. 30 years of in the director's office.
Oh, I could tell you stories.
I'd love to hear those stories. I guess maybe not appropriate for our discussion today, but I've been in the director's office a couple of times. Never for anything bad, so that's a good thing. But it does provide a different perspective for sure. That's a whole other world. I mean, the board office is a whole other world. And then within the board office, you've got the superintendents, and then you've got HR, and you've got the director, and all those places are just different. They're eye-opening, to me at least.
Yeah, and it's a different world. I mean, you get away from the bells. The only bell that you'll hear there, well, I was in a Catholic school board, so the district office, the only bell was the one that was calling you to mass on a Wednesday morning. You know, but it's a different world. And it's easy to get in there and to start to believe that that is reality. So I think, and my experience is, especially in the program department, the district that I worked with, people would feel it after a few years and they'd know that they needed to get back in touch with schools, you know, if they were in a position where that wasn't happening on a regular basis. So.
Yes. Well, as a frontline classroom teacher, we classroom teachers talk a lot about having return to see what's going on, to get a feel for the culture and the pulse of a specific school, because it's different. And I know when we're released and we get to go to the board office for PD, it's a different world. We get to sit down, we get to talk to each other, which is, you know, that's a big deal for us. And to use the bathroom without waiting for a bell to ring or for a planning time teacher to arrive. So I've heard it a lot in the past 15 years. It'd be nice for some people that we've not seen a long time in a school come back and check things out. And that's not to say, it's not to say anything negative back to their work, what they do. It's just that whatever it is they're up to, you know, keeps them away. Or at least every school is different, right? Like they may be, we've got 48 elementary schools in my district. So they might be spending a lot of time in 20 of them. And they just don't, those 20 don't happen to be full. For me and my colleagues, it's like, hey, where are these people? Are they should come around and see what's going on here.
Yeah, I think everybody at a district office needs to get around. I remember my first year teaching, I had to go out into the hall. I saw the superintendent there, and the superintendents were supposed to come into your classroom and look at your day book and sit and watch you teach. And it was towards the end of the year, and I saw him in the hall, and I said, come into my classroom. I had to drag him in, you know, because either they trusted you implicitly or they trusted that the principal had things in hand. But I think it's just healthy, you know, that your upper administration get into the schools and not just for official business or, you know, cutting ribbons or walking in and out of classrooms, to actually sit for a couple of hours with students, with teachers, to get into the rhythm of life in a school, I think is really important, because you as you say, and the bathroom is it's metaphorical, but it's true too. I don't think I'd be able to do the classroom thing now because as I get older, I have to go to the bathroom more and more. So
you just have to learn, I guess, to play with your time properly and make sure it all works. Like I hear you. I'm not there yet, but there are days where I think I need to go to the bathroom and I have to wait another 40 minutes before that happens. So it's a different world. It's interesting. I wouldn't trade it for anything. And it sounds like you wouldn't either. So I'm glad that we both have that in common.
Yeah.
You and I spoke, you were telling, I asked you about motivation and inspiration to right now in the present time. And you gave us I don't know how many people listened to the last one. I don't know how much they heard of it, but you were telling me about some of the amazing things you were up to and some of the ideas you have. And you've hinted in our communications back and forth that, you know, you've evolved a little bit since the last time we spoke, which was only about a week ago. So please tell us about what you're up to right now and what's motivating you and inspiring you to do what it is that you're working on doing.
Yeah, there are a couple of things that I'm really excited about. And we didn't talk about last time because, well, one of them hadn't even happened. But in my personal life, and it's not just my personal life, it's my learning life, I would say. I have found a piano teacher that is going to help me close a very important loop in my music education. And I've played the piano. I started taking formal lessons when I was 10 and played, started playing organ at a local church when I was 14. And so I've done music all my life. But there was something in my musical training and my lack of discipline that really put in my mind that I just wasn't good enough to call myself a pianist. And so I've decided to close that loop. And when I was in grade 13, when grade 13 was still around, I was 2 weeks away from taking my grade 10 Royal Conservatory piano exam, and I chickened out. So I have found a teacher that's going to help me get done. And so I've started a website this week. It's about to launch the end of the week, called The Reluctant Pianist. And I am the reluctant pianist, and reluctant not to play, but to call myself one. But by the end of this journey, I will. And so that's one really exciting thing. But there's another exciting thing I'm anxious to tell people about. Part of my work with the Canadian Education Association over the past few years has been to get into communities and talk to teachers and talk to parents and administrators. They call them stakeholders. I like to call them shareholders because we all have skin in the game. We all care about this. The metaphor stakeholders means this is my property, stay off, I'm claiming this. So anyways, what we're about to launch, and the announcement just went out yesterday through the CEA, we are starting 5 regional exchanges across Canada, and I'm responsible for setting up the 4 English-speaking exchanges. And what we're doing is we're going out into communities. We'll be in Vancouver, we'll be in Regina, we'll be in Ontario, I believe, in the GTA, and we'll be in Halifax. So 4 regions of Canada, and we're gathering about 16 to 20 people in each of those regions to get a sense of what the issues, the trends, the dispositions are around public education across Canada. And the Canadian Education Association is 125 years old this year. And it has a history of doing this. It has a history of going out and trying to connect ideas and connect thinking across Canada. And I'm just so excited to be part of it. A little overwhelmed to be in charge of it. But if there are any of your listeners want more information, they can go to the Canadian Education Association website, and there's an application form there. And so for the month of September, they can apply and become part of these regional exchanges. there will be a fall gathering at the end of October, beginning of November, and then there'll be another one in the spring. And out of it will come not only a report, but the beginning of a brand new educational network across Canada called the EdCan Network, which is being started by the CEA as kind of a rebranding of a very old and wise organization. So that's really, really exciting, because what that will allow us to do is go in and gather people together from different perspectives, from different regions, and really get a sense of what's on people's minds in terms of issues. And, you know, we can talk about we can say, okay, we know that the equity will be an issue. We know that First Nations education, Indigenous communities will be an issue. But it's going to look different in every region of Canada. And it's really important we tap into that difference and that diversity. So those are two major things that I wasn't able to tell you about last time, but I'm really happy to introduce into the conversation now. And again, I'll stop and breathe.
Both are awesome and amazing. The first one, working to be able to call yourself a pianist and feel good about it, is just, you know, it's too bad that it couldn't have happened earlier, but it sounds like now is the time for it, and you're going full steam. So that's amazing. That's inspirational for people, because I'm sure there's a ton of people out there who have let go of something along the way and would love to get it back. And so to hear you talk about your journey around that and what you're doing now to bring it full circle is awesome. And then the second item, just like, it blows me away that this opportunity is now available. And I hope that people do look into it and think about it seriously, because you're doing something pretty cool here. And I don't believe that you're not happy to be in charge of this. I mean, this is right up your alley. This is what Stephen Hurley is all about. So the fact that they've chosen you to be responsible for something like this makes perfect sense to me. And in my mind, I have no doubt that you're going to make it happen, and it's going to run very smoothly. So I don't know where I don't know inside of you, I don't know where that's coming from, but well, I'm glad that Stephen Hurley 1.0 didn't work out, because Stephen Hurley 2.0 is working out quite nicely.
Well, you know, Roland, there's some connective tissue in both of those things that I've just talked about. And I need to be really clear to myself that with the music thing, it's not something I'm going back to pick up on, because I do music every day. I play publicly every day. And people know me as someone involved in music. But the point there is that I've never felt comfortable with my own musicianship, right? So it's kind of like, and many people listening will resonate when, you know, you hear that phrase, the imposter syndrome. On the outside, I can sight read and play, and I can sit down for 3 hours and make you believe that I know what I'm doing. And to a certain extent I do. But there's a psychological thing that we tell ourselves, is that no, you have no right to be doing that. You don't have that piece of paper. You don't have those qualifications. So a lot of that is, and I think as teachers, we run into that too. You know, teaching is full of people who don't believe in themselves the way that they should. And so the second thing in being a little overwhelmed by the responsibility of this EdCan network piece is a little bit of that coming up. And the significant thing for me tonight is that I don't usually talk about this, you know, because who wants to talk about those deeper narratives that run through our mind and hold us back or prevent us from picking up on opportunities. But I guess that's become a theme in my life. And so I'm going full steam ahead on both of those things.
Yeah, I want to talk about those deep narratives. That's one of the reasons I'm doing this. I want people to feel as comfortable as they can to talk about those things. And the really neat thing that's come from this experience is that I've talk to people about what I want to talk about. And then they tell me, oh, I'm really, you know, worried. I don't want to talk about that stuff. And I'm like, well, ultimately, you're going to talk about what you're most comfortable with. And I'm okay with that. The fact that somebody's taking time out of their lives to spend it with me, I'm not going to force them to talk about anything, but I can kind of tell them my interests and what I'd like to do. And then at the end of talking to them, they always tell me, thank you for the opportunity, because I don't normally talk about these things. It just doesn't come up. And so, and what's really cool is that they're talking about it, but then for anyone to hear. So it's like the deep narrative that they don't want anybody to know about, but then they start talking about it and then it's out on the internet for anybody to hear it. So that's the, I'm glad you said that, because I wrote down here on my paper, I do, !! And then about the pianist thing.
Now, make sure you pronounce that correctly, okay?
Did I say pianist? Is that right?
That's correct. Okay. It is. My wife, when I gave the title of the website to my wife, she said, uh-huh.
I bet she did. But around that, I'm sticking to my guns on that. I call it going back and picking it up, because for some strange reason, you decided a long time ago that you weren't worthy to call yourself that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whatever reason, I don't know. And, you know, we probably don't have enough time to go there. But the fact that you're going back now to pick that up, I think it's more valuable. What you said about it is more valuable than just somebody saying, oh, you know what, I played a little bit here and there and I didn't really do well, but I want to go back and become better. Like you said, I do know you to be a musician. So I just think it's cool. There's a lot of things in a lot of people's lives where outsiders will look at them and say, they're really good at that. They're very skilled at that, whatever that is for them. That person, they may not feel that way. And you remind me of a lot of times when I was a young man, a younger man, and I had friends who played hockey, and I remember them always feeling, not all of them, some of them felt like, I'm just not good at this. Like, I don't take to make it to the next level. And I'd say to them, have you watched yourself play? Like, have you seen, I watch you play and I can see strategy and skill and in like an, of things about you that makes you so good. And how do you think you make all these teams? Like, you're playing top ranked hockey and you still don't believe an expert hockey player. And it's just so cool. I mean, I've got those too for certain things where people say, wow, you really excel in this area and I don't feel confident at all, or I don't feel like I'm at a higher skill level than them, but that's not the way they see it. So good for you for going back and going back. But it, like you said, it's not to learn how to play. It's to get something that you feel like you've never really had or weren't comfortable with.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? And listening to your talk, I think people feel comfortable revealing things like this because of who you are. I mean, it's who you present yourself as. And I will say that it's made me think, and part of the reason that I'm you know, launching a website based on it is because I think there's a learning there's a learning journey here for me, and I think for other people as well. But it focuses me on my own kids, and I guess if I were in a classroom, it would make me think about my own students and the way that they think about themselves and their abilities and their talents and their skills. And I think there's a real, even a deeper narrative here about human flourishing and about how we create environments where people can flourish and not feel that they're inadequate or not skilled or don't have what it takes. And I really think that this is where I want to see education in this country start to shine a light, is on this whole idea. And the Greeks called it eudaimonia, which I love, eudaimonia. And it was that whole idea of human flourishing. And, you know, more deeper than just saying I'm happy or I'm content, but that real growth and flourishing. And I think this is where this is all drawing me, and this is what I wake up thinking about now. So,
as usual, you offer so much for people to reflect on. I love the way you brought that right back to our students, because that's exactly what's going through their minds about not feeling good enough sometimes, even though you could be standing right there saying, wow, this is excellent stuff. And I guess it's human nature, and I don't know where it's come from or how we've been socialized to allow it to happen to us, but it is a little bit sad, and I hope that down the road we can snap out of that. I think with the whole, now you can correct me if I'm wrong, because like I said, I'm still young in my career. You can maybe tell me, this whole growth mindset idea, did it exist, or is growth mindset relatively new?
I think the way we're talking about it is, I don't think it's, I don't think it could be new, but I think that the way that we're talking about it in terms of education now is new. Like a lot of things, you know, there are a lot of things that seem to be new initiatives or new dimensions of the work that we do that have been around for a long time. So I think growth mindset, you know, as a possibility in terms of the way we think, has been around forever, but it's really taken off. You know what it's like? It's another one is like mindfulness. We're going to see mindfulness just take over all of our conversations, like growth mindset has, to the point where if you want to go into schools and offer workshops or something like that, if you include mindfulness in the description, it's going to be saleable. So I'm not recommending that, but what I'm just saying is we like to grab onto things, you know. But I think in grabbing onto things like growth mindset, and in grabbing onto things like mindfulness, and in grabbing onto things like the power of introverts and Susan Cain's work on that, it just gives us a different lens to look at our work through. And I think that's good. I kind of resist some of the things that we hitch on to the bandwagons, and then people will say, well, that'll be gone in a few years. Well, no, it's been around for a long time, and it won't be gone. We may pay less attention to it. But I think that, and I'm in no way am I answering the question that you started out with. But I think that, you know, education has collected, you know, what do you call them? They're not initiatives. They're ways of thinking, new ways of thinking, you know, whether it's mastery learning or visible thinking or visible learning. But I think all of them are good in that they give us another way to look at the work we do and the people that we do that work with.
The reason why I asked is because in the few years I've gotten to know Peter Skillen, it's funny because I can recall, like right now as I'm talking to you, I can visualize two or three times where I've been in his presence, and someone will say something and Peter will respond with, well, this has been around for a very long time. What you're talking about didn't just start. And he'll tell them exactly where he remembers this concept coming from, when he learned about it. This is not new. It's just been repackaged in a way that is new for you because you're relatively young in your career. But it just, so that's why I wanted to ask, because I see growth mindset, the way we're approaching it now, as a way to help our students, the future, be able to go into anything they want to do and understand that they may not be good at it at first. And it's going to take time and practice and energy to kind of pick up these skills and habits that are going to lead them to success. And I think that if you start thinking that way, I know lots of people who have thought that way their whole life, and those people have never really been affected by what other people think and by the limitations that people have tried to place on them with respect to their interests or their careers. And but they've always been seen, from my perspective, as different, as weird, as strange.
Yeah.
Whereas now, it to me, as an educator, if you don't have a growth mindset, then now you are the one that's going to be viewed as strange or different. And I don't think that's right either. So that's why I asked the question. I just wanted to know, from someone who's experienced education for a lot longer than myself, if this has just kind of been repackaged in a different way.
Well, you know, a couple comments on that, and I've known Peter for a long time. I can honestly say that he has been around long enough to see a lot of things come and go. Sorry, Peter, if you're listening to this, I listened to your podcast and it was wonderful. And I agree with that. But one of the things that is really changing the game in education now and in many, many aspects of life, is the work that has been done over the past 15 years on neuroscience. And I think, whether it's growth mindset or whether it's new forms of psychotherapy or whether it's mindfulness or whatever it is, a lot of those things have been informed by this exciting work that's been done on the brain and the brain on, we have books like that. This is your brain on music and this is your brain on the Blue Jays. You know, it's just the ability to look deeper into the psychological processes, the neurological processes rather, that happen in various stages, in various moments of our life, I think is amazing. And, you know, we may have had this intuitive sense 30, 40, 50 years ago. You know, when I was going to school, may have an intuitive sense. And so it may seem in a lot of cases like some things are coming back and the pendulum's swinging. But I think it's swinging in a much more scientifically based way. And I don't think we can deny that. We have always had a sense that bright, colorful spaces are conducive to different forms of learning. Now we know why. You know, we can see our brains, how they react in those environments. We can see so much more, and I think it's a really exciting time to start looking at maybe some of those things that we did intuit and say, okay, here's our intuition. Why is it working, and why is it important?
Yeah, you raise a good point. If we can. Well, we've come a long way in neuroscience, as you've said. So if we can see how the brain reacts to certain stimuli, it'd be neat to go down that road with other things that we feel is good practice or is very helpful for students in terms of their learning, for anybody in terms of their learning. Wow, that's cool. You're doing it again. You're going deep.
But you know what? I want to caution myself because that's exciting. So the caution that I'm going to offer is really to myself, is that in the excitement about, you know, creating these wonderful cognitive environments, you know, cognitively rich or the potential for cognitive depth. You know, we talk about deep learning and pedagogies for deep learning. We can't lose sight of the fact that there's something very, very human that can't be measured, that can't be scanned, about learning and about, you know, the relationship that is there in our classrooms, and that hasn't changed. And I don't want us to go down too far down that rabbit hole, if you will. And say, okay, we can create perfect learning environments now, and kids were going to, you know, we're going to be able to measure all of this stuff, you know, creativity and imagination, and we're going to be able to package it and make sure that every classroom in the country is rich in this way. I don't think that's what we want. I think we still want to make sure that people understand that at the core of teaching and learning is that relationship, and we're going to mess up a lot. We have to. But if at the same time, if we can put that growth mindset on top of that messing up, then we're all going to be in a better place, I think, teachers and students.
It's going to happen. Learning from it is a whole other thing.
Yeah.
Positive way, and then using that new learning to hopefully not mess up the same way you did before. So thanks for explaining that. I enjoy the way you provide your understanding, you provide your opinion, and then you kind of go back and I don't want to say you're talking in circles. It's just funny how you go back and you warn yourself, you know, like you prepare yourself like, well, I said this, but I hope that this doesn't happen or whatever. So it's neat to listen to you talk about stuff like that. I can see the passion because we've got video and audio going on here. So I can see the passion that other people can't see. And it's that part of all of this is pretty cool that I get to have the best of both worlds, but not everybody. I'm not putting that out there for everybody. So everybody.
Well, yeah. And I'd just like to, you know, I talk in circles. Sure. Yeah. You just have to ask my kids, you know, Daddy, don't tell us that story again. And it might be interpreted as kind of not sure whether I'm right or not. But that's not the point. It's not the point of being right. One of the phrases in education that absolutely drives me crazy is best practice. Because it drives me crazy. Does it drive you crazy? Well, maybe it doesn't.
No, not particularly. There are other things in education that drive me nuts. But tell me why best practice drives you nuts.
Well, it's because I think we want to, what we want to do, or what some people in education want to do, and it's usually not people that are spending their time in classrooms and schools on a day-to-day basis. They want to jump to things that they feel will work in all cases. And the reason best practice, and I'm not against excellence in teaching. I'm not against excellence in school culture. I'm not an anti-excellence person. But what I'm afraid of is that we lose sense of the complexity of this place called school. And all of the threads that combine to create that context. And I love the word context because it comes from the textile industry, literally meaning to bring threads together, to weave things together. And as soon as you say, okay, this is best practice, go do it. And we're going to come and check. We're going to come and check to make sure you have the right things on your walls, that you're saying the right things at the right time. We run the risk of losing a sense of that complexity. And then teaching and learning just become complicated things that we can master. But we can never master teaching. We can never master it. We can't control it. That's why I kind of cringe when people say, well, we'll just, you know, find out what best practice is, and then we'll just distribute it and expect people to do it. Yeah. So,
well, now that you've explained that, I reflected on times where I've been in staff meetings where we've had to present a best practice, and strangely enough, that word when I was being supervised by someone or some people that I knew that's what they were trying to do. They were just gathering a list of the things that Roland does and a list of things Lisa does and a list of things that Kelly does that they believe is best practice, and then rolling it into a package and saying, here, now everybody do this. So from that perspective, I dislike that very much for a couple of reasons. I've worked with people who have supervised me, and I guess I could trust and I could see their authenticity. And maybe other people couldn't see what I was seeing, but for me, it was always an opportunity then to share the amazing things that were happening in my practice that clues if they felt like they were looking for something in that area. So mm-hmm. I remember my claim to fame, my best practice that I can think of at the moment is when I was teaching grade two, and it was around doing balanced literacy assessment measures, reading records with students, and then communicating the results of my reading record with the student to their parents, and then providing them with a list of things that they could do that was completely connected to the needs and the strength that that one student showed me during those reading records. So it was like, it took me, and I remember saying this because there were new teachers sitting at the table, and I said, hold on now, all of you can just stop, you know, thinking that like Roland woke up one morning, decided to do this. It took me 5 years to get to what I'm telling you today. Mm. You're going to go back. And I mean, I'll give you what I have, but you may not truly understand what's happening unless you've done it for 5 years and kind of racked your brain over how do you communicate this information to parents in a way that is in a way that they can actually do something with their child that is not only meaningful, but will help them improve their language literacy. And so, you know, on best practice, and I would joke at staff meetings and I would say, I told you what my best practice was in October, and now it's June. My best practice is I'm going to survive this month. I'm going to make sure the kids are still learning. And then I'm going to go home and reflect on the year. That's my best practice. And everybody would laugh because, you know, they kind of knew me and the sense of humor that I have. And, but I mean, like, it took a long time for me to gather one part of my practice that I was really proud of. And that I could honestly say it took me time to build that capacity. So it's just funny. You talk about it. And I think when I worked for people that were just gathering it to throw it back at us and say, okay, here's a list of 15 things you're now, compared to people that would say, hey, that's great. That really worked well for Roland. If anybody's interested in going down that road, you know where to find him. So now let's talk about the next person, their narrative and their context.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I love what you said about now it's June. Because this was my best practice last week, but you know what? I got this new student in my class, or I got this phone call from the parent who revealed this. And you know, here's an example. In the last 2 years in the classroom, on the very first day of school, I went home and I called every parent and said, you know, I introduced myself. I said, it's the first day of school. What can you tell me about your son or daughter? Because I don't know. I haven't read the OSRs or, you know, I forget what I said, but I made the point of contacting every parent on that first day of school. For me, it was a valuable relationship building tool. And I would never say I'd go home on the first day of school and call their parents. But should you think about how you're connecting with parents early? Yeah, I think so. And that may be in the form of, maybe in the form of a note home. You know, it might be meeting them in the pub on a Friday. Well, we used to be able to do that actually. My best practice is there's a lot, still so much about teaching, and people are attracted to teaching because of the esoteric quality of it. I can bring me to it. Ever get to the point where a teacher is not permitted to go into a classroom and bring themselves every day, you know, then I think we've lost something. And I'm not suggesting that that is what we're going for, but I think it might be a side effect of some of the things that we're talking about.
I get your vibe. I understand where you're coming from. I can see it on both ends. And for me, it comes back to relationship and trust. And without that, then words can get twisted and people can dislike them. And then, you know, they can be resurrected, so to speak, when you have relationship and trust. And so, I mean, that's what I take away from what you said. And I totally understand where you're coming from. both sides of it. I've seen best practice as like a real downer, and I've seen best practice as a real upper, I guess you could say. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I was just gonna, can I say one more thing about that?
Yes, please.
Let me say this about that. I think there's a tendency, and it's connected, because people that disagree with the perspective that I'm taking on that will say, well, if you knew that there was a particular protocol for handling an ailment or a disease that you had, and your doctor wasn't aware of it or didn't use it, would you not feel somehow slighted or inappropriately treated? And yes, I want my doctor to be, you know, connected with the research, although many aren't, and using what the best knowledge that we have around, you know, medical protocols. But teaching and learning are not the same as being a doctor. And we want to draw that connection so often. And I don't see a lot of doctors using educational metaphors in their work, but we love to use medical metaphors. We love to use business metaphors, you know, the client relationship, those types of things. But I don't think they work. I think we have to stand up as a profession and say, no, we're different. This is different. And if you don't see that it's different, come into my classroom on Monday morning or Friday afternoon, and I'll show you that it's different.
Again, I like what you said. How come business and medicine aren't using the things that we're using in education? Why is that? What is it about education that, funny thing, I'll say very quickly. I remember having a meeting with another professional in another profession, and I'm not going to mention what it is, but I remember saying something like, in my role as a teacher, what you're doing right now is completely inappropriate. But I'm not a teacher. I said, but you're a human and you're communicating with me, and don't you want to have a good communication? Don't you want me to feel this meeting, feeling good about the meeting, feeling good about you, feeling good about our relationship? But I'm not a teacher. I'm not in education. And I said it again. I'm like, okay, fine. You're not in education. I get it. But, you know, you could learn a lot from how a teacher speaks to another human being in a way that makes them feel valued and in a way that maintains their dignity. And what you're doing right now, and I'm going to tell you that because it's not right for anybody to talk to other people in a way that makes them feel bad. And in teaching, I would say that many of us go to work every day thinking about how we can bring people up instead of bringing people down. So that's funny. There's a lot of people that will say, well, I'm not a teacher. I'm not in education. And yet here we are in education, taking the best of different fields and bring in what we do so we can make our job a more effective one, a better one, and so kids can learn and benefit from it.
Yeah,
it's a political thing too, and I'm not going to get into the politics, but yeah, we're educators, so we're supposed to just we're supposed to do it all, and never say anything about it, you know, never offer our opinion, because our job is to go and teach, and that's our job, and we're not supposed to do anything else.
Yeah, we know that's not true though.
What do you mean it's not true?
No, we do more than... Yeah, there was that pregnant pause there. We do more than that. We know we do more than that. I mean, that's what makes this profession so so dynamic, is that, you know, there's what the public has come to understand about the work we do, and then there's the work that we do. And that's not, you know, that's may sound self-righteous to some, but there's just so much that you can't put in a book or, you know, in a blog entry, although you can try. You know, going back to that best practice, I think if I were to write a book about my own teaching practice and the way it you know, developed over the years, the title would have to be, well, it seemed like a good idea at the time.
That'd be a great title.
It did seem like a good idea at the time to have those kids wandering out into the woods like that. Is it best practice? No, please, no. But they'll never forget
I really enjoy going on field trips and having parents say to me at the end of it, I'm glad I don't do what you do. And they always say it with a big smile on their face. And I think, well, you know what? It is, I love what I do. And some days are better than others. But at the end of the day, I always leave feeling appreciative of the opportunity to work with young people and be able to, I believe I'm moving them in the right direction. So it's great. But yeah, the parents look at me and they're like, I just don't know how you do this every day. And, you know, in all fairness, I explain, hey, we're on a field trip. They're excited. You know, it's not the way I would want them to be acting either. But I mean, I have to think about where we are and what we're doing and how long they've been waiting to do this. And, you know, you don't work, I'll say to the parent, you don't work with kids all day. So, I mean, you're a parent, but it, school is very different than home. So, is, you know, from my experience, but yes, the job, school with your plans all set and ready for the day. And then something happens, some kind of crisis comes up and you need to deal with that and the relationships first before any learning is going to happen. So
I think one of the most influential principles that I had was my fourth year teaching reminded us at the beginning of every staff meeting, at the beginning of every year, when we talked about curriculum, he said, look, the kids in front of you are your curriculum. Take it from there.
Wise words.
Yep. Yep.
I've also heard the opposite. The curriculum are in those books over there. Make sure that, you know, they're being taken care of.
Yeah, Larry Swartz down at OISE used to walk into his first year class with his pre-service candidates, and he used to take the stack of Ontario curriculum, and he used to sit on them, and he said, there, I've covered the curriculum.
I've heard that one many times. That's a popular one for teachers, for sure.
There you go. I thought he was being unique. Sorry, Larry.
Stephen, this brings us closer to the end. So you know what I like to do at the end. We've had all this time to chat about the work that you do and what motivates and inspires you and the cool things that you're up to right now. But we're at the final word. And the final word is when I ask the guest a question about motivation, inspiration. It has to do with being approached by someone or you approaching someone who looks unmotivated, inspired. What would you say to that person to help them find their motivation or to become inspired?
I'd say, go get a coffee. No. You know what I would say? And this is maybe different than what I said before, but I would say, find out or rediscover or connect with what is really valuable for you. What do you value the most about this work? And do your damnedest to create the environments that are going to allow you to live those values. And that's a huge task. But that sense of committing to those values and living those values, you can't go wrong. You can't go wrong.
Great answer. And I think it is similar to what you said before regarding the values. I'm looking at my papers and I can't find what I'm looking for because there's so much. But I believe you did say something about values. Oh, I have it here. Quote, unquote, what is it that you value?
Well, see, I haven't changed that much in a week.
You also talked about, you know, you'd have a conversation with this person and ask them about what grounds them and where they're coming from. So, no, you haven't changed that much in a week. I'm kind of happy, though, because obviously you value, you talk to them about what they value. So That's important. That's the Stephen Hurley, the Stephen Hurley this week, 2.0. 3.0 will come another day, and we'll have to see what's going on in your life and if you still feel the same way. I'm more than certain that you'll have new projects on the go, and you'll be able to report on the projects that you were talking to us about today. I'm looking forward to hearing more about your journey as a pianist. And I want to hear that confidence. You know, I want to hear you say that you achieved what it is that a long time ago you just didn't feel comfortable saying about yourself with respect to the piano. So I'm looking forward to that. So we will have to connect at another time. I'm hoping that we don't connect for a Stephen Hurley 3.0 because the audio from Stephen Hurley 2.0 did not work itself out.
Well, I'm hoping too, because I don't think I could do well. No, I could do this. I could do this quite a bit, actually. We should talk about a 3.0, but you have a lot of other guests to get through. But I will commit this next time we get together on air, I will actually play for you.
That'd be cool. That'd be very cool.
Yeah. So you decide what it is you want me to play, and I will learn that as part of my repertoire.
Really?
Absolutely, I will. For you, Roland? Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm glad that we recorded this, because if you ever say otherwise, I'm going to just refer you to the podcast and say, hey, listen, this is what you said, Stephen Hurley. This is what Stephen Hurley 2.0 said. Anyway, thanks again for joining me. It was good.
Just good?
Well, I need time to reflect. Remember, I told you, Stephen, before we were on air, that I've had quite the day. So I'm looking forward to now having what I call my me time. This is part of my me time, but it's when we stop broadcasting, I'm going to go and chill out. Tomorrow is our meeting of the school year, and so it's going to be an early morning, and it's going to be a half day worth of administrivia, and I don't know any teachers that really love this first meeting, but on my mind. So I appreciate you putting up with me throughout this podcast as I which is nice. So I appreciate that. So thanks again for your time.
Thanks for the opportunity. And go Blue Jays, go.
Yes, I think they won tonight.
I think they did too. Yeah.